From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
I saw a video reel on social media the other day of a harvest of shallots, and it made me realize that I haven't grown those delicious little allium bulbs in forever, and who knows why. The harvest video was on Hudson Valley Seeds' Instagram account, and one of that New York-based organic seed company's co-founders, Kay Green, is here today to talk about growing shallots and their more commonly grown cousin garlic, and maybe share some other ideas for succession sowing of edibles whose planting time still lies ahead, whether for fall harvest or to overwinter and enjoy in the year ahead. Hi, Kay, and how is this wild weather you're treating all of you at the seed farm?
I can't believe you wanted to open talking about the weather. We thought we were going to keep this positive today. No, we're good. It's just been, you know, wet.
Yeah.
So that's been a challenge, but
yeah.
Something every year.
Exactly. The new normal. So, you know, I wanted to talk about this. I saw that, you know, reel on Instagram, that video, and it was like you had this special device, this machine that was like harvesting the shallots. And by the way, I don't even know if we say shallots or shallots.
Yeah, depends on how fancy I'm feeling. Sometimes we say shallot, but then when we have everything harvested and laying out on tables, drying in the high tunnel, I like to say it's the shallot chalet.
Cute.
Just, you know, you walk in there and it's just pungent. You can really smell, you know, part of what makes shallots so special in terms of, you know, both their aroma and their flavor. But yeah, we have that special tool partly because, you know, our values and ethics as a seed company are about producing as much as we can ourselves in our region. And with shallots, which of course is different than seed production, is we need to grow the actual shallot and harvest it and dry it. And people are planting it almost like planting a clove of garlic.
Right. So it's a little bit different from a seed, although it's a sort of, we use it as like they say, seed garlic or seed shallots or whatever.
Right.
Yeah. And you have a couple of different kinds, do you?
Yeah, there are some differences. I mean, they're all really easy, I would say. And it's part of what makes this time of year so exciting is to kind of say to yourself, what can I plant now? You know, I did all this work and the beds were prepped and you know, I did all this advanced work and I got some things out of my bed. So what can I do now? The two varieties that we have this year are the Dutch Red and the French Gray. And they're both delicious and they both really bring that special, you know, somewhere between a sweet onion and garlic flavor, but it's its own special flavor. And they're planted the same in terms of planting it like you plant a clove of garlic, you know, a couple inches deep, good amount of compost. You know, like 8-inch spacing, 18-inch row spacing, really similar, and that they're going to stay in the ground for the winter, and then they're going to produce and be harvested the next year.
But they taste a little, I think in one of the descriptions on your website, you talked about this sort of umami flavor of one or whatever. They're not exactly the same, but there is a sweetness to them.
Yeah, they're sweeter. They're more like a sweet onion, but they have that garlic flavor. But, you know, you're always looking for familiar words to describe flavors when it's its own flavor. And to me, when I think about it, sometimes I think about like white wine a little bit.
Oh.
I'm not sure. Like there's just something indescribable about it, which is why they're so sort of gourmet, sought after, and why they're really expensive to buy in the grocery store. And actually it's one of the things that's a lot more affordable to grow yourself than it is to purchase.
Indeed. Now, because you went and mentioned the word rain, of course, if you hear a sound, it's the rain. It's just started pouring down here again for the 2000th time in the last 15 days.
And it's on the way here.
Yeah, I'll send it over in a minute. But, you know, I haven't grown shallots in a long time. And the last ones I grew were what were given to me. Seed was given to me. I think it came from England, from Thompson and Morgan at that time. And it was, this was many years ago. And they were called banana shallots. And they were bigger than the average shallot. And again, I grew them from seed, like I would grow onions from seed. And it was kind of fun, you know. And they were, I think, a cross between an actual shallot and an onion. You know, I think the breeding and the taxonomy of all the alliums confuses the heck out of me. You know, I don't ever see it really explained. You know, like I see even the two that you have. One is in one species of allium and the same species as onion, and one is in another species and so forth. So you have that gray traditional shallot, yes?
Yeah, so yeah, the taxonomy is, you know, things keep changing.
yes.
And so it's, you know, we think of taxonomy as this thing set in stone, and it really isn't. So with, you know, I think the only important thing to really think of is like, it's an allium, and that's enough for most people. we don't have to overthink too much, but they are a little bit different. The main difference is between the French gray and the Dutch red. So the French gray is what's kind of referred to as a true shallot. And it's interesting, you can't grow the French gray from seed. I mean, you could grow something from seeds from French gray, but the only way to get it to grow true is to plant basically a clove.
So it's like you have to have a clone, a division.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
The Dutch red you can do either way, but we still recommend just doing the clove. It's just so much easier for folks, especially this time of year. But, you know, some of the differences, because there's so many similarities in terms of depth and planting space and time, time-wise, there's a little bit of a difference, which is Dutch red stores a lot longer in your kitchen than the French gray.
Okay.
And that also means that the Dutch red, if you wanted to hang on to it and plant it, you know, like a month before your last frost date, like early spring, you could still get a harvest from those, even though we still recommend planting it, you know, in this window of like October for our region. Whereas the French gray doesn't store as long. And so you really have to plant it when you get it. And for us, that means people are ordering now. We ship in October so that people get them when it's time to plant them and don't have to worry about storing them.
Right.
Home. I would say French gray only fall planted, and the Dutch red better fall planted, but can be done in the spring. And I would say, you know, for most people, they're doing both.
Oh, interesting. So they're trying a little both. And the French gray, I've read about it in other places. And again, it's the one that's called the true shallot, you know. You know, and I've read that it has kind of a harder, not a shell, but like a harder skin a little bit. Like, is it a little bit different in texture on the outside?
Yeah. It almost feels like a shell.
Yeah, that's what I've read, and I've never had it. So I mean, I've never had it in my garden, so I've never seen it, you know, raw, unprepared.
Yeah, and it's beautiful too. The skin is almost has this like copper sheen to it. They're so pretty. And then when you break it open, it has this like pink, white, purpley kind of ombre hue from the tip to the base. They're really, really elegant.
Huh. And again, the red one is in, I believe, Allium sepa, the same genus and species as onion, but I think this one has, and you know, the names are just impossible. Oscaninii, Allium oscanini, something like that, you know. Yeah, whatever, if that's even the way to pronounce it, but who cares? And it's sort of it's a French heirloom, I think, as well, right? It's a very traditional, beloved.
It is. And sometimes you'll hear it called Grizel.
Grizel, right, of course. Yeah. Huh. So let's just, you know, you kind of gave us the quick version of the, so fall planting, it's, we have a bed that had something else in it. Like we pulled our tomatoes and we cleaned up the bed a little bit and our shallots could go there the way that our garlic could go there. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. And I would always say add compost, you know, okay. Whatever's been in there has used up a lot of nutrients.
Okay.
And whether we're talking about the shallots or garlic, they want good, rich soil. So definitely add compost. The other things that they really like, they love water. They like good drainage and they like water, you know, that
yeah.
thing.
Yeah.
So if you happen to be somewhere where it's, where you're not underwater for the whole season, you do want to keep them watered in the beginning. Once it's winter, as long as there's snow and precipitation happening, you don't really have to worry about it.
Yeah. So what's the yield like? Like how much do I plant? Like if I'm a person ordering shallots, you know, how much do I plant and how much does it turn into? Because, you know, that's always the thing with garlic is, each clove theoretically has the capability of becoming a head, a whole, you know, a cluster, so to speak. And so what's the yield like in these different shallots?
Yeah, so it's similar to garlic in that way of it's different when you're planting onions because one seed is one onion bulb or one, you know, one onion set is one onion. Whereas with the shallots, when you plant one clove, it's going to multiply. So, you know, we sell it in half pound, and then it goes up for there from there. But for a pound of sets, basically you're looking at 40 to 50 cloves in a pound.
Oh, okay.
So from there you can kind of do the math of
your
yield is going to be like 6 to 10 times what you planted.
Oh, okay. Wow. Yeah. All right. And so the gray doesn't store so well. The red stores better. So that's one that is going to be a good keeper, and I probably would use the gray first if I was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
It's still a good keeper. It's just not going to last you until the next next planting season. Right. Whereas with the Dutch red, and probably I shouldn't say this out loud, but with the Dutch red, you really could hang on to it, you know, harvest it and just keep replanting it. You know, save some to plant the next season and some to eat.
Yeah.
Once you get it going.
Yeah.
But the yield is one of the really exciting things about it. And the way to kind of wrap your head around it is that, you know, that one clove is going to turn into like 6 or even 10 or 12 cloves. You know, it's going to grow,
yes,
split. So there's going to be like a cluster.
Yeah.
And you'll be able to really see it because there'll be all these leaves, like multiple leaves coming out.
Yes. And that was what was fun in that video that I'll give people the link with the transcript of this show over on awaytogarden.com. But to your harvest video, it was like you were using this mechanized tool to like turn up the strip of soil that had all the shallots in it. And what was happening is that at each place where a clove had been inserted was a cluster of fading foliage, but underneath a whole cluster of bulbs. And it was just fun to see these, you know, the multiplication that had happened underground in this way. So,
you know, I often talk about seeds as something, or plants as being generous.
Yes.
And sort of exponentially generous. And usually I'm talking about seeds, you know, you plant, you know, one seed that makes a tomato plant. Think about how many seeds are in all the tomatoes from your tomato plant. It's more than anyone could ever, you know, keep for themselves and plant. And so we wind up sharing seeds. We're kind of sowing it forward when we're part of the full life cycle. But garlic and shallots are like that too. It's an incredibly generous plant.
So the only other thing I didn't ask about is once we do harvest the next sort of July or whenever, I guess, sort of like garlic, we do cure them in a dry place, airy place, but out of the sun, correct? We want to cure them. Yeah.
Yeah. So the process, and you know, you can see it at a larger scale for, you know, what we do, and I think there's some other photos up, but this is for home scale as well. You want to leave the leaves until they start to die back. You want to cut the scapes the same way that you do for garlic, so that it's putting more energy into the bulb. And you can eat the scapes, different flavor than garlic scapes. I think it's really good in a pesto, with a few other things in it. So cut the scapes, but don't cut the leaves. That they're going to signal you, okay, the leaves are done putting their energy into the bulb. They're starting to die back. But you don't want to cut the leaves when you harvest them. You want to keep the whole thing intact, all the cloves that are attached to each other with the dying leaves. And like you said, you want to put that somewhere with good airflow, but not in direct sun, to cure. And the leaves will get kind of brittle. And then you'll see the skin on the bulbs kind of color up. And when those leaves are totally dry, then you can cut the leaves above the tip of the clove. You don't want to cut into the bulb itself.
Right.
And then you can bring them into the kitchen after that.
Right. So so sort of transitioning, you know, it's very similar, as you said, when you were describing depth and spacing and so forth, very similar to garlic. And even the curing sounds very similar. You know, the signal, learning this slightly different signal of at what stage to harvest, depending on what kind you're growing, whether it's the shallots or which type of garlic and so forth, and when the scape is going to come, which with hardneck garlic, which is why I like it, you get a scape too. And, yeah, you know, kind of learning the exact timing and everything of the one you choose to grow is always interesting. Mm-hmm. I've grown garlic for decades and decades, and I lost it. I lost my garlic for the first time. I lost all of it this year to the white mold of, which is this horrendous, it's the really most deadly horrible fungal pathogen of all alliums potentially, but mostly affects garlic and onions. And for a number of years, it has been in our region, in New York State and in New England and so forth. And it's a worldwide thing. And I don't know, I did buy, not from you, I did buy seed garlic, you know, recently. And so maybe I got it that way, or maybe it came in, who knows how else, I have no idea. But yeah, so I won't be able to grow garlic in that area anytime in the next 40 years, and I'm not gonna live that long. So, so that's the end of that. It sounds very much like growing garlic. And any other tips or ahas that are very different about garlic that you want to share with people? Because I know a lot of people are probably going to be planting garlic this fall, and they're probably ordering now. I love the hardneck stuff because you get that extra, you know, harvest with the scapes.
Yeah. I mean, I love garlic. So I like, you know, again, I like to grow a little of everything for the kitchen.
Yeah.
And our variety pack actually is our most popular.
Oh, well, that's a good idea.
Varieties, but yeah, there's the variety pack that people love. They're really not that different. One thing I've learned, though, from folks who are colder than us is that they mulch more in terms of their garlic and shallots than we do here. I don't really think about mulching that much, and our winters have gotten more mild.
Yes.
In terms of temperature, not in terms of other things. So I do know that some folks who are colder find that they're successful getting them through the winter by mulching.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So depending on your zone and so forth. It's a great thing to grow. And there's so much else, you know, I just want to, you know, sort of remind ourselves, because do you at this time in the seed company, do people sort of check in for a packet of this and that because they realize they don't have enough to do a succession of something? Or is it, do you, I mean, obviously it's, spring is probably the biggest seed ordering time, but I bet you see some repeats now at this time of
year. Oh, yeah. This is such an exciting moment to feel like your hard work for everything you did to get yourself set up, and then you've been eating and enjoying your harvest, that this is the, you know, this is the second spring.
Now. So what are people after, like, around now? What are some of the, what do you hear? I mean, I would imagine, like, salads and other greens would be one thing that people are always after, because you can do so many successions of those. But what kinds of other things are people after?
Yeah, in terms of seed, it's, like you said, a lot of mixed greens. So arugula, spinach, all the mustards, radishes, great time to throw in another round of radishes.
Right.
And, you know, just to be able to continue to have that fresh eating, that brightness on your plate at home, and that joy of going out. But it's, you know, things that are quicker. And also because the day length is getting shorter and shorter, which means that the days to harvest are getting longer for things. And so that's why we focus on, you know, these quick, so and harvest something like arugula, which is going to be really fast. Whereas even right now for us, we're just outside of the window of doing a second round of peas. But, like, you know, yes, we could have done peas, you know, in the last month and gotten a harvest. But now, because of the number of hours of daylight, we just wouldn't get to the point. But pea shoots, you can sow lots of peas, and for a quick harvest, if you want that flavor, you can still put in peas and do pea shoots.
Well, you were one of the first places that I ever knew about Hudson Valley Seed was, that had organic field peas, the kind of peas that you could use for cover crop. So in other words, a bag that was big enough, not a little tiny packet of peas, which would barely give me enough for a couple salads, you know, if I was using them as shoots. You had them in these bags that were for, but yet they were organic for, and I don't know if you still do that, but
Austrian winter pea, flavor of the Austrian, it's great for your soil. You know, speaking of, you know, things to put in now, cover crops, I like to say you can garden naked, but don't leave your soil bare. it's just one of these things where it's like, you put in the work, now, you know, take care of it. Even if you don't want to get a harvest out of it, whether you're putting in a oats and peas mix or the Austrian winter peas or buckwheat, or you're thinking, you know, something that you want to overwinter, like winter rye, what we've put together is the amounts of those types of cover crops that people who have a home garden scale need.
Yes.
Rather than what, you know, we used to see, which is just like 50-pound bags, which is great for small farms or medium-sized farms, but not so great for home gardens. So people are, our cover crops are very popular right now.
Yeah.
And come in different amounts.
Well, and again, with the peas, the great thing is that you can, it's much bigger than a single little packet of pea seeds that you'd use at another time. And so you can almost broadcast them, you know, and then let it grow as shoots, and it's quick, and what an incredible flavor and texture to make a salad. I mean, they're just so delicious. And I know people who stir fry them. I know people who just use them raw, again, as like a salad material. Mm-hmm. And they're fantastic, and they're gorgeous looking. And it's just such a, you know, and then you can do another one. I think you can even get multiple cuttings off them, I suspect.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep. Cut and come again, peas.
Right. So no time where we are, a little bit south of here, there's still time for peas, and further south, absolutely, you know, because this is ideal time, because it's going to be cooler than, you know, bumping up into the heat of summer farther south. But yeah, I mean, there's that, like you said, there's that quote fall factor, as some places call it, the almost 2 weeks difference, up to 2 weeks difference that it can take for something to mature with the shorter day length and so forth, less intense sun. And the other good thing, I think, besides the sort of salady greens, even something like kale, baby kale is really delicious and super expensive at the organic, you know, produce section, right? So a bag of baby kale is like umpteen dollars a pound, but you can grow that. So even if you're not going to grow it all the way through, which you could, but, you know, if you covered it, if you took care of it over the winter, but you could even just harvest, right, baby baby greens that way.
Absolutely.
Yum.
And, you know, some of the mixes like our braised greens mix or our ultimate salad bowl mix, mescaline mix. Those are great to do right now because you're going to get a diversity of flavor and texture and color. You can sew them really dense. And then just, you know, like you said, as a baby mix, cut them, and you could probably do two or three rounds of that still.
Right. Still, even in the north where we are. Yeah. So as a last minute or something here, just give us a reminder, as an expert seed person, we should not store our leftover seed in the pocket of our gardening jacket or out in the garage, correct?
we get this a lot, Margaret.
I know.
It's cool, dark, and dry.
Okay.
And so if it freezes, you don't want it there. There's very few seeds that you actually want to freeze. You don't want them to freeze.
Okay.
You don't want them to have a lot of humidity and moisture. And you don't want them exposed to sunlight and heat, because those are all the things that the seed is looking for to be like, hey, it's time to grow. So we're just saying, you know, let's not give them those cues just yet.
Okay. So cool, dark, dry. Okay. Yeah. All right. Thank you. Well, I'm so glad to reconnect on the podcast, Kay Green from Hudson Valley Seed. And thank you. I'm excited about the shallots. So fun ahead, I think. And thanks for making the time. Thanks for coming in from the field to make the time. I'll talk to you soon, I hope.
Always happy to. Thanks so much, Margaret.
Okay.
All right.
And I hope I'll talk to all the rest of you soon again, too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or on Facebook and on Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening, including from seed and bulbs. Meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.